In preparation for its 100th anniversary celebration in the years 1987 and 1988, Morehead State is conducting a series of oral interviews with former students, staff, faculty members, and administrators. I am Audrey Jones, present Director of External Studies at Morehead State University, and today's date is Monday, May 2nd, 1983. I'm interviewing Kay Fosse, formerly Catherine Edlund, who was a student at Morehead State Teachers College in 1924-1925 and a member of the graduating class in 1925. Kay, you are listed as coming from Fergus Falls. Was that where your home?
That's where I was born and raised in Fergus.
You were born and raised in Fergus Falls. And how did you happen to come to Morehead State?
Well, when I went through high school, I thought I had my sights set for a job as a bookkeeper, but all of my girlfriends decided that they were going to be teachers, and that was one of the last things that I decided that I was going to be. However, I took normal training at the high school there, and I couldn't have gotten a better background. It was just the best that a person could get. And from there, I began to realize that bookkeeping wasn't for me. It was teaching. It was something that I knew I was going to like. So because of the fact that some of my friends had come up here to Morehead, and I had a little friend that came up to Morehead every summer, and had sort of made me intrigued as to what kind of a country this part of the country was. So that's why I came here.
It was quite a shock when you came to the flatland, huh?
It was hard to get used to.
Yes.
But somehow or other, as the longer I lived here, and I've lived here since 1927, I just have really enjoyed it.
Good. Did you say that you had come up some summers?
Yes, I had taken some summer sessions before that.
Uh-huh. Did this prepare you for teaching? Were these
no,
what types of classes did you take?
They were classes that had been told that I should take them because they were good.
I see.
And
these were sort of liberal arts courses.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I had also taken some classes at St. Cloud.
At the
teacher's college there, and found that all of those summer classes were classes that I never would have gotten on a regular, basis, because they were teachers from outside of the area here.
I see. So they had guest teachers
coming
in.
Yes, guest teachers.
From
one of them, especially good, was one that I took, Child Lit. Was a full-blooded Cherokee Indian, but who was a teacher in Columbia University.
I see. So she came,
yes,
she gave up her summer,
that's
and came
right
out here,
mm-hmm,
and taught, mm-hmm, in the program.
Yes.
Were those classes very large?
Well, a lot of them were classes where the teachers who were already teaching had come back, I imagine, for extra curricular,
yes,
marks, and some of them were those that were trying to get through school a little sooner.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And in some of these cases, the background that I had wasn't quite adequate for what I was into.
Yes.
But I managed to get through.
How old were you at that time then?
I started teaching when I was 18.
I see. So you were about 17 then.
I was 16. Well, no. I taught for 2 years in a rural school.
Oh, and when you said that you had been to a normal school at the high school level.
At normal training.
Normal training.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had received some teaching credentials.
Oh, yes.
Then.
I had 1 year and something over a year that was giving me a credit.
I see.
And I did a lot of a student teaching at the time that I was taking normal training.
Mm-hmm. So,
it was
so
a good background.
Yeah. So you'd been out then for two years teaching. Where did you teach at that time?
Oh, it was a little school right outside of Fergus.
I see.
And I was just unusually fortunate in getting into a community that was musical. So I played with the orchestra, and I kept in touch with them I still keep in touch with them. Mm-hmm. Whenever they have any musical events, why, they always let me know.
Well, what's the name of this town? Do you remember?
Carlisle.
Carlisle.
Uh-huh.
And they had an orchestra?
They still have it.
They still have an
orchestra?
They
still have it, and it's mostly the Fiestas, The offspring of the original ones are the ones that are keeping it up.
Oh,
it's really something.
Really amazing.
Yes,
isn't it?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Now, where did you get your musical training then? Where you'd already?
Music was sort of in our family, and I had learned to play the organ when I was just a little bit of a kid, and somehow or other, I guess I have it in me.
I see.
I haven't taken a lot of lessons, but I do a lot of playing.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't take any lessons as you were growing up? You just sort of learned?
Well, I took them as I was going to junior high, I think.
Yes.
When I got into senior high, I was too busy.
Right. Well, then you decided. You really were in classes with other experienced teachers then in the summer.
In the summer, especially.
Yes.
During the year, not so.
Mm-hmm.
They were all girls about my age. Because a lot of them had not come to school until after they had been out of school for a year or two.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you came, you said that they did give you some credit for your previous training?
Yes, I got a year's training. Mm-hmm. I got a year's credit for the training that I had gotten.
So you were immediately classified as a senior? As a senior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be a senior at Morehead State at that time, did that mean that you were at the end of a 2-year program?
That's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So this wasn't any 4-year program.
There was no 4-year program at the time that I was there.
That's right.
I think that was begun in 1926.
I see.
There were a number of men that came the last part of the year of 1925. They were almost a minus quantity up to that time.
Yes.
But as soon as they started giving a 4-year course, then it attracted men.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, of course, I'm not so sure about 1926, but I think that was the year that they started the 4-year program.
Yes, I think that I have read someplace that their first graduates were in 1928, so that would make the 1926 date right.
That's
because
right.
People would go on from their 2-year program.
That's right.
Yes. I did notice that in your senior class, I counted up the people, and I found 220 names with 17 of them male and 203 female.
Well, we just didn't have the boys, as I said, there were few and far between, and I could tell you a few things about Concordia had more boys.
I see.
It was in the evenings the Concordia boys would come over to get to see the MS. It was MSTC at that time.
Yes.
And we'd walk 7th Avenue.
I see. What did you do for entertainment? Did you go to the movies or go to an
ice cream store? Well, we could go to the movies on Friday nights, but we had to be back by, I think it was 11:30.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't live at the dorm, but a good many of my friends lived at the dorm, so we had a curfew. And Fridays and Saturdays we were allowed, even off campus.
Mm.
We were checked on just like those girls that were on in the dormitories.
So your hours were the same.
Oh yes, our hours. And on weeknights, it was 7:30. We went back to study at 7:30, and as soon as it was close to 7:30, the Concordia boys would take to their heels and go west, and we'd run over to the east.
Right. Would they let you study in the library, or were you supposed to be in the rooms?
We were at our in the in the homes.
I see.
Or in the rooms, I should say. Mm-hmm. The library was not open in the evenings.
I see. Mm-hmm. So all that study every night.
Maybe until 7:30, you know.
Yes.
But after that, no.
Whose home? Do you remember whose home you stayed in?
I stayed at the home of her name was Mrs. Lundeen, and it was right close to the cemetery, Prairie Home Cemetery over there.
I see. So you were strategically located to get to know the Concordia
Yes.
boys.
Yes. It was fun. I mean, there wasn't a great deal of things that to do. We did board the streetcar that came right up into the circle here.
Oh, yes.
There were no gates here, and there were only two buildings, and the administration building. Did they call that McLean Hall? No, I don't think
probably
so.
Probably not at that time.
No, that was afterwards.
Yes.
The administration building, and Weld Hall was comparatively new at that time.
Yes.
I'm not so sure just exactly when it had been built, but it was a lot newer than the administration building. And all our classes and the campus school was in the administration building.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So every class that we had was held in that one building. So we didn't have to go from class to class like they do now.
No. Were there other young women in the same house with you?
Yes, there were three of us.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine whom I still come in contact with, she comes up to visit every year. And then another friend of mine who has been a very good friend of mine since we were 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to school together.
And
we went to college together.
Did you find that there were some difficulties because you really lived in off-campus housing? Did you feel left out of some of the activities?
There were not too many activities. Of course, we couldn't. There were a couple sororities. There were the Gamma Nus and the Witches, which we weren't able to join because we weren't staying. We weren't at the college long enough.
I see. You had to have been here.
We would have had to have been here for a year, I think it was. Or not probably a whole year. But we would have had to have been here for a certain length of time before. Mm-hmm. And then if that was the case, then we would probably be in the sorority only just a few months. And
yes.
Nobody thought that was worthwhile.
No.
But a lot of my girlfriends were either witches or gamineus, and
I suppose.
But we didn't seem to feel that we were.
You didn't feel you were discriminated
against
by it. No, not
at all. I belonged to the art club, and I was in the chapel choir, and we did those things, and they seemed to take care of our. I don't know. We didn't. I guess we just didn't crave the excitement of doing things all the time.
No.
We played.
Well, you were more mature at that time. You'd already worked,
true.
And you
that's
were all
true.
Ready to.
And I was here. I think maybe the fact that I had taught for 2 years, I had formulated in my mind why I was going back.
Yes. Now you were here to study and to
and,
learn.
And I learned.
Mm-hmm.
I came there with that idea in mind, and because of that, I worked.
Yes, your studies were important, where they might not have been quite as important as someone who'd come right.
I could tell you just a little bit about, maybe you were going to ask some other questions about student teaching and things like that.
Oh, that would be, I would find that interesting. Yeah.
I had done a great deal of student teaching all year in my normal training classes. And had an excellent supervisor.
Yes.
She was just A1. And so when I came here, I had already taught 2 years and had 1 year of. But then we were allowed to take primary, intermediate, or junior high, and
yes.
I chose junior high.
I see.
Mm-hmm. I like the 7th, 8th, and 9th grades.
Mm-hmm. Did that mean much difference in the course of study?
Well, it did, because you had to take methods. I took junior high methods.
I see, instead of the...
And you learned how to handle and approach junior high mm-hmm. children.
Were your basic courses much different?
Well, I'm surprised at some of the things that we had to do in student teaching. I taught the whole year of 1925. I started in the fall.
I see.
And I taught then until the spring quarter.
You taught on the campus
school.
Quarter.
Yes, I taught right in the campus school, mm-hmm. which was mm-hmm. right in the administration building.
Yes.
And my first job as student teacher was to teach Julius Caesar to ninth graders.
Well, how did that go?
My supervisor, there were about, well, this is going back, there were 17 in the class.
Yes.
Which was a pretty good-sized class. They were mostly boys. And
were they mostly children or faculty here?
No. I don't think I had any of the children of any faculty.
I see. So they were Morehead residents.
They were Morehead residents, mm-hmm. and there were quite a few that came here to go to school in the campus school, mm-hmm. recognizing that they had would get good education.
Surely.
And I think too that a lot of them from this general area preferred to go there. And there were some of the children from farms that were close to Morehead mm-hmm. that came in, and I know that my supervisor, probably I'm telling things out of school, but anyway, she knew that I had taught before, of course, and
right.
She said, "Well, if you could just make those kids behave, I'll give you an A."
She didn't really care if you taught Julius Caesar or not.
She had been having quite a time with them,
mm-hmm.
because they weren't mean, but there was one boy in the class, and he never did anything. But as soon as he stood up to recite, they all laughed, and that was quite a thing. And the funny part of it was, I met him about 2 weeks ago. And
is
I
that
says,
right?
"Aren't you?" And I gave the name.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he said, "And you're Miss Edlund." I says, "Do you realize how long ago it is since you were in my class?" He says, "I'll never forget you."
That's wonderful. How many hours a day did you spend in that classroom?
We had hour classes.
I see.
And I remember an hour seemed indefinite when I first came, because I had taught in a rural school where my classes were probably 10 and 15 minutes long. And so when I prepared, I had decided to study the Elizabethan theater first before we embarked on Julius Caesar. And I worked enough, I did enough work that I thought would cover 1 week. And she said, "You don't have to do anything more for the rest of the 6 weeks." Because I had so much material.
Right.
I just wasn't aware that time was that precious, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that I never really cared for any of Shakespeare's plays when I was in high school, but I was determined that I was going to learn to enjoy this and get the class to enjoy it. And I think they did.
You did?
They liked it, and I got so that I, the next summer, I took classes in Shakespeare.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So both you and the students became involved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, was this a fairly normal thing as far as practice teaching at the at the training school is that every student would have a particular project and teach for an hour a day, and then they go to their own classes the rest of the day.
That's right.
That is the way it was normally handled. Most students then did not ever have to take over any classroom for a full day, or did they in the elementary grades?
No, they didn't.
They didn't, even in the first or second grade.
When I, the second, we had to do two terms of student teaching.
Yes.
And my second term of student teaching was early history of Morehead.
Nice.
And then I had eighth graders.
Mm-hmm. That would be an easier topic to interest them. Oh, wasn't it?
Because there was really no information. There were no books. We had to rely on what people told us, what little we could find, and it involved a lot of work, a lot of research. Mm-hmm. And we were fortunate in one way in that there were a number of people that had lived in Morehead, in the early history of Morehead, that were able to let us interview them.
So you did the same thing that we're doing now.
Is
that right?
Yes. Mr. Meikle was one of them. I was trying to think of some of the others that he had a drugstore. There were a couple others. Oh, Mr. Comstock. He had a land office down on First Avenue South. And there was a third one. I don't recall his name, but through them we were able to get the feeling, the flavor of Morehead as it was, and it became an intensely interesting
yes.
thing. And my class, now there was another one in my junior high methods class. The two of us sort of worked together.
Did you do the interviewing then? For example, did you interview Mr. Comstock?
That's right. And mm-hmm. we interviewed any of these that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And after this was all of it got put together, we printed a small booklet.
You did. I was just going to ask
you. I still have it.
You do have
mm-hmm.
it. Do you know?
And it was all the information that we had was used in the pageantry class, of which I was a member too, the spring of the year, and we had a pageant on early Morehead down along the river that was all taken from the material that we had gotten.
Oh, how exciting, Kay.
It was. It
really
was.
Sounds exciting.
My student teaching here was fantastic. It really was.
Sounds marvelous.
I really enjoyed it.
Can you, how large a cast did you have in your pageant?
Oh, our cast was large. We had Indians and we had settlers and we had, we even had people that could sing for us, you know, to mm-hmm. give parts of it. I can still remember the Indians coming down in canoes, you know, along the bend of the river there.
Yes, you did.
It was really, Miss Frick was, we worked with her.
And she was your advisor for the
she
pageant.
She was the advisor, and she was also teaching our pageantry class. There must have been, 150.
In the cast.
Yeah, because we took college, those that were going to college, too. And there were quite a number of them that were taking Phi-Ed classes. And we recruited anybody that we could.
Did you invite, I presume, the whole community?
We invited anybody that would like to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have an audience? Was there
yes, we gave it to an audience.
Yes, that's how large an audience?
Oh, that I can't recall. No. They would have to come and just stand along the... we had it down by the old footbridge, down by the... There was a place down there that had canoes for rent and that. I think Domers had it. And it was down in that area that we gave the
The pageant. Did you use both sides of the river or just
the
Moorhead side?
No, just this side of the river. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. And we've used that material many, many times.
How about costumes?
We made our costumes.
You made your own costumes?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everything was done, you know, in our class, in our pageantry class.
Mm-hmm. How about your interview with Mr. Comstock? Can you tell me how you reacted to him, what kind of person he seemed to be?
He was quiet and really didn't, whether he wanted to tell us or whether he was a little bit reticent. Now, Mr. Meikle was much more open, I think. It was just a difference in their personalities.
Mm-hmm. But you did get information
from
both of them.
Oh, yes, we got good information from both of them. Mr. Meikle used to tell us about all the social events that they had. And maybe Mr. Comstock didn't get into to some of those. I don't recall that part of it. But, of course, he was. We were cognizant of the fact that he had given our this land for the
school.
For the school. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we held him in high regard.
I would imagine so.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the fun part of it was that when I went back to teaching again after my husband passed away, I had his granddaughter in my class.
Is that right?
And as a result, we went over and studied early Moorhead and had a play, and at that time, Mr. Comstock, not the old Mr. Comstock, but George Comstock, who was his son, we honored them when we gave the play.
In your public school.
That's mm-hmm. right, in the Moorhead Public School. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you left here, I'm going to come back to Moorhead MSU again, but when you went back into teaching, where did you teach then?
There was a school. There were two schools that were being negotiated into a student teaching. One was the Clearview School, and one was Oak Mound. Clearview was south of Moorhead, and Oak Mound is north.
Yes, and these were being added.
They
to the
were
training
added,
school.
And they were. We called them affiliated schools because they were under the jurisdiction. All of the student teaching and everything was going to be under the jurisdiction of the school here. And when I went out, Dr. Archer was probably one of the top men that were responsible for it. And then they would have student teacher supervisors that would come periodically. And once in a while, Miss Lohman from our campus school would come. But that was after the new campus school had been built.
I see.
Mm-hmm. But, and as a result, there were a number of us that were interviewed. And probably because I had taught in a rural school and because I'd had 2 years of experience and had two good years of student teaching here.
Yes.
I was chosen as one of the supervisors at Oak Mound.
I see. So you taught and then you supervised Moorhead.
I taught 7th and 8th grade and 9th grade mm-hmm. at Oak Mound. And then we had a change of student teachers every month. And it was a new venture. We had to work out ideas as to how it could be best done. And the girls lived right in the school. We had a teacher's right there.
Did they?
And we lived there, too.
So you had those supervision of those young women 24 hours a day.
We
then.
Did.
Did they then teach all day for you when they started?
No.
They were still just
they
in...
did a lot of... they had to write lesson plans based on our teaching. And that had to be handed in to the college or to the methods class here in town. And, of course, we had to correct them
In other words, they observed you teaching. Wrote down lesson plans based on what they observed.
And then after a certain length of time, then they were allowed to write a lesson plan on their own and then teach it.
And that would be their month's work, this. Now, would they do the same sort of thing that you had done on the campus, one project, like the Julius Caesar project? Or?
To begin with, we didn't do that so much because projects were sort of in their infancy at that time. And it was something rather new to me, too. So I felt that, to begin with, we just sort of worked it out together, and they watched what we did, and usually they would probably take a class not so much connected with a project as with another kind of a class, because we wanted them to see the continuity of the project as we were working. And you might be interested in knowing that one of my very first student teachers was May Tangen. She just passed away last week.
You have such a long history in this community, and it's amazing how people keep coming back, and you suddenly see people again that you taught. And
here she came back. She went out to teach, and she came back later as a primary supervisor at the school. So at the same time that Alice Corneliusen was there.
Oh.
So
interwoven connections all the way along, right. How long did you stay at Oak Mound then?
Well, I taught only 2 years there, and then I was married.
I see, and then you gave up teaching for a while.
Yes, mm-hmm. But we were always active with school activities.
And did you keep up your connections with
the college?
With the college.
I tell you, my husband was on the school board, and it was interesting in that the college and all these school boards had periodic meetings, and when we had these meetings to iron out certain things that were new to them and new to the college, we always had we entertained the other school at a dinner, and it became quite a social affair. So probably in the fall of the year we'd be at Oak Mound, and maybe in the spring of the year we'd be at Clearview. So that we became very well oriented as to what the college wanted, and they also became cognizant of the fact that there are certain things that the school board wanted too.
Yes, it sounds as a good arrangement.
It was a very good arrangement. And then, of course, we had with the student teachers there, there were four that came out. To begin with, four came out every month, which we decided that was not long enough. It would have to be 2 weeks of supervision before they even would start, and then probably 1 month where they would be given different classes to teach. And so that was one of the things that were changed. Mm-hmm. But they lived right there and did all of it. Mm-hmm. So we had to make fun.
How about the food? How about feeding them?
Oh, yes,
them?
And we always had a cook. We had very good cooks. Mm-hmm. My mother was there for 2 years.
Is that right?
Yes, mm-hmm. After my father died. Mm-hmm. And I think all the girls, they liked it.
Yes, you'd have a closeness of feeling and of working together that one wouldn't get today.
And we had a lot of fun. Every night after supper, we did something that was a lot of times a little foolish and mm-hmm. something to laugh at. And,
you'd put on skits things like and that. Things like that,
oh,
you mean?
We did a lot of things, yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. We usually would go for walks. And the community out there was an unusual community, for one thing. And they just took us in as a part of the community. So we were invited to this person's home and to another and so on. And so that really time was never dull, yep. Never.
When did you go back to teaching then? Do you remember the year?
When I went back after my husband died? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I went back in 65. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, in 56.
56, uh-huh. And then you taught in Moorhead Public
Schools.
Then I
taught for
10
years in Moorhead, mm-hmm. in the Moorhead Public Schools.
Yes, well, you've had a long experience with the schools. I'm going to ask you now about a few of the people. You've mentioned Georgiana Lohman. Can you tell me what she was like?
She was... I was trying to think where I got my first impression of her. She came out one time, and it was shortly after we had started. And, of course, the children were scared to death of her.
Oh.
She had rather formidable stance with her, and... she came in as though she meant business, and she did, you know.
Yes.
But the children, I tried to get them to answer. You know, we were talking about, I don't remember what our class was, and she was rather disappointed in our my teacher participation. It was much too strong. But the children were scared to death. They hadn't had this kind of an experience before. Yeah. And it didn't make any difference whether it was Ms. Lohman or anybody else. They would have been just as frightened.
She was sitting in the back of the room and supervising. They just froze.
And they froze. Uh-huh. And she told me that, too, that she just thought I had too much. And, of course,
one
of the things that we had been working on, and I never had to worry about that in any of the classes I had here in the campus school. So it bothered me, and I just made up my mind. She was going to be invited sometime, and not it would probably take a whole year, but I would invite her, and she would see that there was something different. And we did just that.
Uh-huh. So they finally got used to having her there.
Oh, yeah. She didn't come that often. Uh-huh. But I started doing a lot of work with the youngsters participating and being on their own a lot. And I had some very, very bright children out there that were able to just go along with what I had in mind. And I know we were making a newspaper. And one of the boys was an editor, and I wish you could have seen what they had done. So we invited Miss Lohman out. She was amazed.
Oh, that's good. I think I mispronounced her first name. It's Georgina, isn't it?
Georgina Lohman.
Lohman. I noticed that you still call her Miss Lohman.
Oh, yes, we always call her Miss Lohman. Mm-hmm. 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 We had another supervisor, Miss Lockwood. And she came out and I was trying to think. I think probably in the middle of the second year we had another one that came out and just did. It was most of the supervising was by us that were there.
Yes,
really the only thing that really amounted to something.
Now, were there cars for your supervisors to come out in?
The college had their own car.
I see.
And we had a janitor that mm-hmm. had a car, and he was a likable sort of fellow, and he even let us use the car to go to Cragness to get candy once in a while.
Is that right? Well, that would be a special treat, then, wouldn't it? Everybody excited. Well, I don't know. I knew there were cars by that time, but I didn't know how many people would be owning them, mm-hmm. and... But the college had one, so they could always use that. Did any of the students come to school with cars at that time?
No, oh, no.
Yeah, they probably weren't even allowed if they did happen.
No, and there were no cars on campus, never. Mm-hmm. And we had a number of boys that came out as student teachers, and that was so interesting. We kept in contact with them a number of years after they had finished doing student teaching. One of the students that we had that we kept the most in contact with was Arnold Kittleson, and he was, I think he became superintendent of schools at Halston mm-hmm. for a number of years.
How did the, obviously most of the student teachers were young women. How did your students react to the male teachers?
They liked it.
They did?
Yeah, they liked it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the boys never stayed at the school. They stayed in at one of the homes that was just close by.
You were here when President McLean was here. Did you ever have any personal contact with him?
Yes. He had been our superintendent in Fergus.
He had before he and, came here as president?
Right. And I had played with his daughter. So I knew the McLeans before they ever came here.
I see.
And so we got along famously.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what type of person he was?
To me, he was just a beautiful fellow. He was just, I imagine to one that didn't know him, probably the first impression would be that he would be sort of stern. Mm-hmm. But he was just, to me, I just felt that he couldn't have been improved on.
Is that right? Did you think that was a common feeling among the students?
I think so. Uh-huh. And I remember just the human side of him a little bit. I was being initiated into what is now Kappa Delta Pi, but at that time it was Lambda Phi Sigma. It was the same thing, only it was for, I suppose, two-year students. And we had a banquet, and we were given raw oysters.
Oh.
And he says, well, I may be president of the college, but I don't eat raw oysters. I happen to be sitting next to him.
Yes.
But he was just a down-to-earth fellow.
Mm-hmm. Well, you knew him now as the father of a friend of yours.
That's right.
But when you came here to the college,
that
did you...
It had no effect, you know,
no.
I mean.
But did you have much contact with him as a student? Was he at a lot of the affairs, and would he mix with the students?
Yes,
he mixed
with mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. But as I said before, there weren't a lot of activity. It isn't like it is now. You know, the activity is such that... you could be going to something all the time.
That's right.
You know.
Yes.
We would have, we had a class play always, and we had a, I know the art club put on certain things, but the activities were limited.
So you really didn't have a lot of contact with him?
Not a great deal. I always talked to him because we had friends in Fergus that he wanted to know about and so on. But other than that, I didn't have too much much contact with him.
Mm-hmm. Some of these other names that I'm giving you are members of the faculty for whom buildings have been named. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Jenny Owens?
Oh, very well.
I suppose you knew her later in life, too. But
I worked a great deal with Margaret Beery, with whom she lived for many years, mm-hmm. in the same house that...
Is that Lewis. Where B.
Lewis.
B. Lewis lives?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. And Miss Beery was the rural school. She was called supervisor, but she really didn't do supervising a great deal. She was kind of in charge of the methods classes and all that. She was sort of a person that we would go to if we needed help of some kind. Mm-hmm. So I got to know Miss Beery very well.
Yes. And how about Flora Frick? You've mentioned you already had quite a bit of contact with her. You took a class from her.
We worked on this pageant, too,
mm-hmm.
During the time that I was taking the class. And then I played softball and was a pitcher.
Is that right?
Yes. In her class.
Were you involved in any other sports?
No. There weren't enough boys, you know, to have a football team. We did have basketball, however. There were enough boys so that there was a basketball team. It wasn't a major part of the school curriculum as it is now. just because of the lack of boys. It wasn't long before it became, you know, important. There was a lot of music on campus because Dan Preston, who is still here, mm-hmm. and who has been active in music circles.
Were you active in music groups?
I didn't do a lot of that because I came here to do student teaching, and I just couldn't be involved in too many things. If I was to be involved in music, I wanted to do a lot of it, and I was in the chapel choir, which didn't involve a lot of practicing. But other than that, I would have liked to have been in more of it. But
yes, you have a real talent there, and it was too bad you didn't have more
yes,
time.
But
you
I just,
couldn't do everything.
And the same way in art. I liked art, and I know my art teacher thought that I was being very foolish not to to spend more time at it. And I said, well, I came here with the idea that I had to do student teaching, and with student teaching there was really not much that you could do outside of, especially in when I was given those classes that were a little bit hard. Mm-hmm. Julius Caesar and Early Morehead
yes.
weren't exactly
they took
pushovers.
No, that's right. They took a lot of planning time, a lot of work. Did you get to know Alex Nimczyk at all?
Not a great deal, but mm-hmm. I had a brother that went here and was the co-captain of the football team, and he and Alex were very good friends. Mm-hmm. As it was, my brother was killed in a car accident, and both McLean and Alex Nimczyk came to the funeral and gave the most beautiful eulogies. Mm. So that I became, you know, I knew them in that way more than anything else.
Yes. How about Millie Dahl, did you know?
No, I had not much to do with her because mm-hmm. I never lived at the dorm.
Did you ever eat in the
not very often. We stayed with this little old lady, and
she fed you too.
No, she didn't.
Oh, you
we
didn't.
Did our own cooking. You'd be surprised how we did it. But
when you say I'd be surprised, you mean you just had a hot plate or?
Well, we didn't even have that. We would put our we'd bake our potatoes in the front of the inside of the furnace down in the basement, and we'd make scalloped potatoes there. And
is that right? So you really didn't have kitchen privileges
no,
in the house.
She would have allowed it to it. But, you know, people in those days, too, didn't have, we didn't have electric coffee pots and electric fry pans. It would have been great if we could have had those things at our yes. disposal. But you can't imagine that, you know, that those things have all come in the years, intervening years now, and we had none of those kind of things that would have made it a lot easier for us.
Did you eat all right?
I mean, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. We got along fine.
Did you ever eat downtown?
Oh, we had. There was the College Inn over here, and some people by the name of Strands had that. That was absolutely the most fantastic place, and we tried to manage to eat there at least twice a week, and we went over for our dinner at noon. Mm-hmm. And then when we felt that we could afford it, it was always a matter of whether we could afford anything, then we'd go over for a piece of Mrs. Strand's elegant chocolate cake with a glass of milk.
She was a good cook.
Very good, and it was well patronized.
Mm-hmm. Lots of students there?
Quite a lot of students.
Mm-hmm. And how about towns? People, did they serve the towns?
Well, they did, but they catered mostly to students. And I know the Preston family came there regularly, very often, because I think she taught violin and he taught here. And I think they had at least four children.
So they both taught school? College Inn, too?
I think she privately taught violin.
I see. So those
she wasn't at the school.
Well, we have a very modern-sounding family there, don't we?
With don't both, we, though?
Both, that's for both sure. Parents working and children, and then running the college inn that was open.
And I remember a couple of the fellows that I knew lived with them, and they were just, you know, they just helped them as though they were girls. I mean, they just...
They worked for their room and board. Do you suppose?
Worked for their room. I don't recall whether they. I know one of them was Harlow Burquist that's over in Fargo. You know, has been.
Yes, and he taught music
there.
Here. Didn't he?
He taught.
Was he a student or a teacher?
He was a student.
Was a student here at that time.
And he lived in Parker's Prairie, so he and I used to drive down every so often down to Fergus, because once in a while he was able to use a car. So,
how many people could they serve in the college inn?
Oh, I don't imagine that they could serve more than, I would say 35, 40, not any more.
And did they serve a supper there also, or was it?
Yes, they were there for the whole day, but most of the time we wanted our dinner, and in those days we ate dinner at noon.
That was very common then.
Uh-huh.
How much would it cost you for dinner? Do you remember?
That I don't recall.
No.
All I can remember is that one time in 1935, that's after I'd been married a number of years, we served a chicken dinner at our school for 35 cents.
Is that right?
So you see, it wasn't very expensive. Maybe we paid only 25 cents for a dinner, which consisted of probably a hot beef sandwich or something like that.
Yes. Would you find students going over there during the middle of the afternoon for a cake and milk?
It was mostly when they were through with their classes.
Yes. They wouldn't be apt to go over in the middle of the day for a coffee break.
No, we didn't have breaks like they have now.
I see. You were really in class.
It seems we were going to class pretty much like high school, where we would go from one class to the other throughout the day.
So you'd be scheduled most of the
day
every day.
Most of the day we were scheduled that way.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have to make use of all those the rooms, and as I said before, there were the classes that were held over at Weld Hall were the biology classes, the woodworking classes, and music. And at one time, they did have a small home ec department upstairs. I don't recall that it really, whether it was just something that they took on the side. There was no course of any kind that I could recall.
How about the sciences? Did you take very many sciences?
The main science that I took was biology.
How much? One
and
quarter?
I took, I think I took 2/4 of that.
2/4 of biology.
With Ballard. And enjoyed him.
What type of teacher was he?
He was good.
Was he?
I liked him as a teacher. He was down to earth, and I learned a lot from him. I don't know whether other people did or not.
Did you have labs as part of the biology course?
There wasn't a great deal of lab work.
No.
We didn't have really much in the line of labs at that time.
I suppose you didn't have much equipment.
The equipment was very sparse.
Mm-hmm. How large would those classes be in the sciences?
Oh, I suppose probably 40, between 40 or 50.
Those were
fairly
good
sized.
Large classes then.
I think that the only one that taught biology was Ballard.
Were you aware that the college was teaching what they called subcollegiate college courses at that time? Or had they wiped those out by the time you got here? As some to help high school students finish their high school
course. That had been phased out by the time I got here.
So it was only the college program.
I know I had two sister-in-laws and a number of girls that I came to know later that had gone to school here 5 years, and that included their high school and their what they needed for college. And I and my two sister-in-laws both taught in Fargo.
I see.
After they they had gotten their 5 years of work, but that was that included their high school work too.
Yes, I think that probably was phased out just the year before you came.
I think it was phased
because
out
because I noticed it in that catalog the year year before that they still had listed some biology classes. That's where I noticed that they called them sub. Collegiate courses, and I presume that meant high school courses, and so they had wiped out quite a few of those. Did you know Samuel Bridges?
Not very well.
You didn't.
I never had to take a history class. Mm-hmm. History, I mean, social studies and social sciences became my big forte when I started teaching. But there again, I had sort of. Had qualms about history.
What do you mean qualms?
I had taken history from a teacher that didn't teach history that I thought it should be taught.
I see.
And I guess I was one of those kind of people that I wanted to know the reason for things, and I never could see the reason for some of this constant repetition of dates without any references to why we had to remember dates and what value they were and so on and so forth. So instead of taking a history course, I took an economic course and
Who's your instructor there?
Dr. Kesey.
Dr. Kesey.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I got into a class there that was really interesting because I think it was about in... the latter half of the term that I took from him, there were about six, I think, of us who were asked to work out a social studies curriculum or an economics curriculum